Well, good morning and welcome to a summer Sunday morning in the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. As we all are well aware, the United Lodge of Theosophists is an association of volunteers, of students of theosophy who are dedicated and devoted to what? To the cause of theosophy, as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. The purpose of our lodge is to keep the ideas, the universal principles of the ancient wisdom religion, theosophy, before the public, and to make it available to the public for free and for everyone. And to so the one bond that we all have simply is the similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching that we use in the promulgation of this philosophy to stay on track, individually and collectively. The lodge during the summer is open and has meetings on Sundays and Wednesdays, of course, on a Sunday from 11 to 12, and the doors open at 10:30. During the summer, we are conducting classes or talks and discussions from articles of Robert Crosby. This morning, the title of the article is The Recognition of Law. And next Sunday morning, the title of the article is What Reincarnates? What Reincarnates? These articles are found in either the book Universal Theosophy or in another book called The Friendly Philosopher, which is a thicker book, and everything in Universal Theosophy is one section of that thicker book, The Friendly Philosopher. Of course, you can also find it, you can Google it online if you were to Google The Recognition of Law, Robert Crosby, Theosophy, it would come right up. So, the lodge is sustained entirely by voluntary contributions of time, effort, and money. And these contributions assure that the meetings continue. Just to finish off about the Sunday meetings, we meet on Sundays, as we said, in July and September through this summer, but we don't meet on Sundays during the month of August. We take a little break. Of course, during the summer, we do meet on Wednesday evenings also. The doors open at 5:15. And the library is available to the public, a reference library. The meeting goes from 7:30 to 8:30, and each summer we study the Bhagavad Gita, a rendition that is written by Mr. Judge, one of the co-founders of the Theosophical movement. So the also there's a, of course, there's a book table in the foyer for anyone who chooses to purchase books. At our cost, we sell it for your home use. And of course, everything is, almost everything that you can find at that book table is also to be found online at the website of which you can find from the student at the book table. So without further ado, today's topic, the recognition of law, is the article on page 15. It starts in Universal Theosophy. We're going to have the first five paragraphs summarized, and then we will carry on with questions and discussions and investigations together into recognition of law.
Well, we don't think we could possibly summarize the first two short paragraphs without doing them justice, so we're going to read the first two paragraphs. The recognition of law. We have to assume either that this is a universe of law or a universe of chaos, chance, accident. In fact, we know perfectly well that it is not a universe of chance, because everything we use and understand, we see to be under law, and where something befalls us, the cause of which we cannot discern, we nonetheless assume a cause and try to find it. We cannot even imagine an effect without a cause. The first thing that the student has to learn to perceive in everything and in every circumstance is the reign of law. We recognize law in part, but not in full, as it should be recognized. Mistaking our own nature by the very power of that nature, we set in motion causes that produce the results we now feel. And then we call those results by such terms as destiny, fate, chance, or the will of God. The operation of law to most minds means a fate which befalls us, wherein we are benefited or afflicted, but over which we have no control, and in producing which we had no hand. Yet the operation of law can be easily understood. It has been enunciated by all the great teachers of the past as meaning action and its consequent related things. Cause and effect, action and reaction, and the two aspects of one, which are two aspects of one and the same thing. In Sanskrit, both these aspects are included in one word, karma. So we're familiar in the Christian Bible with the concept of karma, and whatever sow a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Okay, so it just makes sense. It's cause and effect. Action and reaction. If we've done it in one life, it will come into another. But of course, the missing chord is reincarnation. Many people get the karma, the action and reaction, but they don't see the whole picture, so they feel that there's an injustice. Okay. It is we who set up causes and feel their effects. Cause and effect, action and reaction, the recognition of law, are seen to be out, they are within ourselves, they are not outside. So, every being has an antecedent cause. Everything that happens to any being has an antecedent cause. So in other words, law rules on every plane of being, and every being of every grade is under that law. So we sow individually and collectively, because we are all connected, we are all one. There really is no separation. So if we think we're doing something and it's not affecting others, we're just kidding ourselves. Because the law rules, and it can't be abridged or broken. So we also must remember that we have all sprung from the same source. We are all traveling toward the same goal, and the path differs only with the pilgrims. The causes that each one sets in motion determine the path that we must follow. No one holds us back, and no one propels us forward. So, in the last paragraph that we're summarizing, it starts with, there is no difference in powers. Each one of us has the same power to perceive, to experience, and to learn. And in this we realize that there's also, we have the power of creation, the power of preservation, and the power of destruction, which hopefully we are destroying old causes that are not beneficial. and then we can regenerate. We ought to see that even now, however hampered we may be, as the result of mistaken actions in the past, we have not lost and can never lose our power to set other and better causes in motion. The path toward all knowledge lies before us. All nature lies before you. Take what you can. That's the end of the song.
Thank you. So we're sure you came with ideas and questions and contributions. Your questions are invited. Yes. Thank you for the contribution here. And the contribution is that really the oneness that we all are is light. And we can reach into that and operate from that oneness. Yes.
Is there any part of our being that is not subject to law?
Is there any part of our being that is not subject to law? Any ideas that we want to throw in there? Yes?
Well, I guess we could say that the very highest, the essence of all of us, is that law. So how could it be subject to itself, but how could it not be subject? Oh, that is such a question.
So is there any part of our being which is not subject to law? Well, we're told that karma rules from the smallest atom all the way up to Brahma. It rules in the elemental world, in the physical world, in the mental world. So law operates everywhere, but it's our understanding that in our highest or innermost nature, everything that we are or do or act on is done in perfect accordance with the law. So maybe we could say that personal karma operates in certain planes, which are the lessons that we learn as we grow and spiritually. But then, such as in the case of a Mahatma or a high adept, he has no personal karma. That doesn't mean that he doesn't follow law. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have to work within the law. So law rules on every plane, we can say that. Whether or not it's the personal use of law is a whole different subject. And that is what we're here to investigate, right? Yes.
Yes, well, in the part it talks about, the powers are the same, and but the path varies with the pilgrim. That's the variation. But the goal should be perfection, absolute perfection. That is, the kicker is that is achievable in this grand period of evolution, because there's always more. But once we become perfected, like the masters have, they've perfected their principles, they're one with the law. So they would not act counter to the law.
Okay.
Because they know the folly of it. We are still the fools. So I don't know if it really matters, like if once once one becomes one with the law, well, it's not like you're subject to it, you're just, you're in accordance with it. It's a choice. We guess maybe they'd have a choice to go back, but why would they?
Our understanding is once once a man being Mahatma and even any mind being such as an archangel, once they've gotten to that level, they've gotten past even the inclination or the possibility of acting in personal ways. That's our understanding. We think we've read it. So let's just summarize that. The contribution is, well, we all have our experiences. The pilgrim has different experiences and develops in different ways, but that's according to the law of his nature because he sets certain causes into effect. So while we all have the same source, and while the power to be, the power to perceive, the power to act, the power to set causes in motion, while we all have that power in common, how we use that power is very different. Therefore, our path back to the source is very different from, can be different from each other. That doesn't mean that inherently we are not a unity. So then the contribution had to do with, well, what about those who have perfected themselves and have, so to speak, we wouldn't say risen above the law, but risen above and beyond the limitations of past personal karma. Well, the theosophy teaches us that each human being is inherently perfectible. And if we're inherently perfectible, all that simply means is if we look at someone, we can look at another and kind of figure that maybe they are emotionally a little more mature than us, intellectually a little more developed than us, physically, in every different way, we can see perhaps others who differ from us and maybe a little further along the path than we are in all those different aspects. So too are we a little further along the path than some of our other brothers and sisters. Well, if we think of the idea of inherent perfectibility, all that simply means is that a human being has the power within himself to evolve or transmute or refine every aspect of himself, to work on it, his psyche, his emotions, his physical purity, his intellectual capabilities, everything. So one who, over the course of certain lives, has learned this and knows this, is disciplined, he can put himself or herself on a path of perfectibility, so to speak, in ways where he sets conditions within himself, the effects of which cause him simply to evolve faster than others. And if the idea is to do so, to use that, those powers in service to others, then eventually the human being is going to so perfect himself that he's going to reach the limit of perfection in this period of evolution, and so we would call him a perfected human being. It's only going to happen if he does so, because, I mean, nature has a trap door and catch 22 all along the way if you're not doing it with the right motive. So that being the case, in this period of evolution, there's always that next period of evolution that's going to present different conditions, more opportunities, and so what we call perfection today is not absolute perfection, it is relative perfection compared to what can be in the future. And there's a hand in the pink.
Yes, and as you mentioned about the motive, then we have to go back to the sentence earlier, the goal is perfectibility. If one has that as a goal, that motive absolutely prevents the result thereafter. The goal has to be to learn and grow and share and be part of that unity, so that perfectibility is a natural result to the efforts of the soul. And the motive has to be service.
So the gradual perfection of all of the instruments within ourselves is the natural effect of one who acts with the right motive. Realize, of course, human beings, as human beings, we affect everything on the globe. And we, as a mass, as a human family, as we evolve, we bring everything else along with us. And in certain ways, as we degrade, so do we affect everything negatively. But the point is, for us to evolve as a humanity, each has to propel, it's an internal, individual, personal decision to cause the evolution within. Nature doesn't perfect the human being. The human being has to make the effort to perfect himself. And so by doing so, we affect everything else and we raise everything else. And by raising everything else, that's karma is going to come back to us. So the motive is very closely related to the causes and the effects. If the motive isn't there, if it's a selfish motive, the effects of it will be very different. There was a hand here. How do you tell the people
that are fighting just to be alive and have to leave their homeland because they're not going to die? How do you look at them and say, well, that's your karma. You did something. You know, that is the only time I find it totally not.
It's totally an abuse of the teachings. Reprehensible. We'd encourage you, there's something on the table. This is a big printout of it, but we have a little pamphlet. It's called Aphorisms on Karma, and we hope we can find it quick, because there are 39 aphorisms on karma.
Yeah, what I'm looking for is, when somebody's in a situation like that, what comfort is there for them?
Right. So without finding it right now, because there's 39 of them, really what it comes down to is this idea of, well, he's suffering because that's his karma. I don't have time for it. He'll learn whatever he needs to learn. That Mr. Judge calls mechanical theosophy, or in today's parlance, we would use the word mechanistic. Mechanistic theosophy. In other words, you know, just going into the rote, you know, without putting your heart into it. So really what it calls for is compassion first. You know, who is anyone on the path of evolution who would not stop, in the words of HPB, to dry the tears of another who is suffering? So when we talk about genocide, there's no law on the books of the universe that says that one human being is supposed to kill another human being. That's not how it works. Yet, we are souls in evolution and have been for millions of years. And who knows what we've done in the past, what causes we've set up in the past, going back to Atlantis and before, the effects of which are going to come. Now, in a perfect world where all are, you know, where people follow the law, those effects are going to come. They're going to hit. Some of us, we're going to get hit. Well, we're all going to get hit hard. The effects of the causes we set up in Atlantis have not even reached us yet. So we're all in for it in certain ways. But that is not an excuse to say, well, that's their karma. That's not theosophy. Yes.
We live in an age now where information is at our fingertips, and we know what's going on in the world, and we're appalled that the world is in such a state. That's why we came here, because we don't know how to change the world. We only know how to change ourselves. So the battle is more or less inside of us. It's like the Gita. that's part of HPV's message for the coming generations. It has been. It's been, these ideas have been permeated.
Thank you. So along this line, that, you know, the, you know, we're all one. This is going on. We're here. We can't affect, you know, we can't stop certain things. We have to work within ourselves, set the example, affect things in way. The point, if we look at the first paragraph, okay. Mistaking our own nature, by the very power of that nature, we set in motion causes that produce the results we now feel, destiny, fate, chance. So the great suffering that's going on, contrary to the belief of people who are involved in it, is not the will of God. Theosophically speaking, the great suffering is going on because we don't understand our own nature. It is we, the human race, who bring this upon ourselves. And the catch-22 here is that in certain religions, if you actually believe that you have that kind of power, you're going to get your head chopped off. But once one accepts that within himself, his true nature is the universal power that we all are, and realizes, wow, I have a hand in this, I'm the one who's doing it, that's when certain things start to change. And those things don't change as long as people think false ideas. It's the false ideas that people adhere to and act on that cause all these repercussions in the world. Was there a hand in with the light green earlier? No. Okay. Yes.
Two ideas regarding the last question. We are told that the storehouse of karma that we have over who knows how many lifetimes, particular results will come to us in a lifetime where we are fit and able to handle it. We're not given more than we can handle. Suffering is a part of that, but this lifetime may be the perfect vehicle to work off that karma, as difficult as it is, and know that it won't have to come back again. And combining that with the last two paragraphs, the first sentence or two of the last two paragraphs.
Of the whole part?
Yes.
Okay.
12 to 13. The ideas we entertain of the supreme, of law, of nature, and of our own being govern the actions we perform. And then the last one, if we change our ideas, we change our actions. Now that's on this plane. If we see that law rules, that this law is inherent in our highest nature and not outside of us, we shall see that it is the spirit in us, our very self, that is the cause and sustainer of all our actions. So, though suffering in tremendous ways are working through tremendous karma, but they have the capability to endure. And if they are able to, that karma will be finished.
Thank you.
All we can do is send good, healing, loving thoughts, and they get mixed into the fray.
The contribution is heard. One caveat we would add to that is the danger of when we experience these challenges, if we do not reflect on them, search for the cause and effect, and at least, and it's tough in certain situations, and accept responsibility, then it was for naught because we haven't learned the lesson. And if we haven't learned the lesson, great nature will bring it back to us. Learn the lesson today, because the sooner we learn it, the sooner we're done with it. The conditions may not be back available to us for another 10 lifetimes. So hopefully, somehow, some way, the message is getting to them. Yes.
In connection with this, that paragraph 9 is very important.
And what page is that on? We have a...
That's on page 17,
okay.
The last paragraph.
Okay.
The one thing we really haven't spoken of is that feeling, that identity, that everlasting. That whole thing brings up the whole idea that change cannot see change. There is something within us, that identity, that we haven't really approached yet, that the perceiver, the observer within us, that's a very important part that we don't get from outside teachings.
So this contribution is an extension from earlier in that first paragraph. First we were saying, mistaking our own nature, we set in motion causes that produce certain results that are horrible sometimes. Well, the reason, so when we mistake our own nature, what we're saying is that we identify with something that is not really who or what we are. We may identify with our physical body. I am a man. We may identify with our particular religion. I am this ism, and because I am this ism, I'm gonna do this, think this, cause this, that is really sometimes unrelated to the universal wisdom that really is within us if we would tap into it. So when we identify with anything outside or other than who we truly are, we're identifying with a false prophet. So who is it or what is it that we should be identifying with? Who is it or what is it that we should identify ourselves with? Any contributions? And then we'll come to the pink. Yes. Who is it, what is it that we should really recognize our true identity as?
Who we are, but our problem is making that a part of our daily life and apply it so that we treat others in the same way that we would want to be treated. First of all, and then we realize that
Okay. So the contribution here is who should we identify or what should we identify as? And the contribution is, well, whatever that is within us, which is permanent, enduring, not changing, well, that eliminates then our emotions, our thoughts, our physical body. There's something behind all of that which observes the change. As was said, change cannot see change, but if we can see change, you know, the 80-year-old man who looks in the mirror and says, oh my gosh, look, I can't believe how old I am now, and then corrects himself, well, no, that's what I'm using right now, but really, I'm ageless because I'm really the same thing looking at things that are just changing. There was a hand here?
Yeah, usually when I think I don't govern my life. My life is already governed by something. I can't choose what I want. So it's really, even if I want this or that, always somehow goes to something else, and it's leading to somewhere. That's the way I see it, and I guess, you know, I believe with God, but you know, that's the way I see it.
So the contribution really is, you know, well, a lot of times what I think I want is not what's coming down the pike, and it's important to recognize that. And that's not to say that what's coming down the pike may not, you know, may be better for us. But the message of theosophy is whatever ends up coming down the pike, if we haven't caused it to happen today, the message here is that somebody else didn't do it to us, but rather within ourselves, we have the power and always have had the power to set certain causes in effect. The effect of those causes eventually come about. sometimes whether we expect it or not, sometimes whether we want it or not. But the invitation is consider two different things. Is it, on the one extreme, some outside God looking down at all the billions, deciding what you're gonna get for yourself, whether or not you know it or want it? Or is it that the power of that universal divine source really is within the individual, the power to choose? If it is, then everything that comes to us, as St. Paul said in the part here, be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Therefore, if we're reaping stuff that we don't think we've sown, what St. Paul is saying is, be not deceived. Whatever you're reaping, you've sown it. So, in the corner. From the what? From the theater?
Yes.
Okay.
I think Somerset Maugham, you can't recall.
Top
webs in the head. But the Razor's Edge is a good example. And when you have a scale, you have what we call a balance. And all pictures of balances show that there is an equipoise. They're level. But they beam across the top, rest on a razor's edge. One point. Well, it would seem that if we look at our own nature and those two balances in that razor's edge, it appears that we are responsible for our actions. We are responsible. In the world. And when something touches one balance, the whole thing will swing back and forward until it comes to rest.
Thank you for the contribution.
So it would seem that we have to start thinking about who's responsible and the conditions under which I live today are due to law. How can I participate and balance upon that razor's edge so that we have a swinging back and forth?
Thank you. So how can I participate starts with, do I actually believe? Have I proven to myself? Am I at least entertaining the idea that I am responsible for everything that's going on? Because karma is that law that always incessantly reestablishes that equilibrium. It's not outside of our power to affect. In fact, we set it in motion. The law is within us. In the pink in the back.
Back to the point about seeing the suffering of others. I mean, whole nations and groups of people. It isn't that we are incapable or ineffective. I mean, we're just one theosophical student. But there's nothing to stop us from investigating to the best of our ability what is causing this, what are the possible remedies. There's nothing to stop us from joining together with others, signing a petition, demanding things of not just our government, but peoples all over the world to turn and help. So it is our duty, if we see something, to take a higher position and act on it, not be indifferent to it. So it isn't just sending positive thoughts, it's doing some positive action.
HPB tells us in one point, work for theosophy. A theosophist is who theosophy does. Perhaps one great modern day example of this contribution would be Mr. Gandhi, who, having been invited to study the Bhagavad Gita for the first time in his life, by students of theosophy, having been given the key to theosophy while attending the lodge, HPB's lodge, he made certain decisions in his life and took action and renounced his identity as a lawyer, and as a proper educated English lawyer, and went back to India and took certain actions, the likes of which have so clearly affected so many hundreds of millions of people. Who knows what each and all can do here? And we will say, we recently heard that in that part of the world, there is an external movement now of people saying, as adherents to that religion, saying, this is my religion and it's not that. And there are people standing up in ways that has not been seen publicly in a long, long time. What's going on?
Sorry.
Okay, yes.
Well, I wanted to just address the comment from the gentleman behind me that we feel like we're trapped. We feel like we're, you know, life is just pulling me along and I'm just going with what happens. You know, I have like no control over any of this. Well, when we realize that, we have to change our attitude. Karma isn't good or bad. Mr. Judge says it's an opportunity. It's always an opportunity. And because we are these beings, these intelligent beings, when we have a action or reaction, we can choose. We can choose how we're going to react. We become the creators of our own future. We started. Whenever you realize that, you start then. And you take responsibility for your actions.
Thank you.
And, okay.
Yeah, so, just a second. The contribution here has to do, you know, some things we can't control. Right, the implication is not, we're not saying that you're a human being. You have unlimited power to control everything that goes on. We can get a battalion of Mahatmas, and they would tell you that, no, there's only so much we can do, but we can set causes in effect and in motion for the future. The issue is not, I can't control this. Certain things are gonna happen. The issue is, do I take personal responsibility? The nation that's going bankrupt, the people individually, can they control it? Things have been going on for a century, who's to say? But suppose the idea were to sweep that nation that, look, it's ours, let's take responsibility and do something so that the future is better for our grandchildren. The effects of that will be very different than those who say, well, we can't control it, it's not our fault. Contribution, sir.
Yeah, actually, I agree like with all that everyone was saying here about, you know, you have to take responsibilities and everything like that, and then to prepare for your future. And I believe in somewhat that is true, because you can do all that. But, you know, sometimes, no matter what, some things do happen, no matter how good you try to do it, don't turn out that way for certain reasons. It could be anything, just, you know, a car accident, something, you know, that you didn't expect, like a curveball that hits you. So those things, that's why I say sometimes I think that you can't really control it, because whatever is meant for you is going to be, or whatever your life is going to be, somehow it's going to be, like, I feel like it's almost written something. I feel that.
Sure, it's entirely reasonable for anyone to look at what's going on in life and sometimes and definitely feel, wow, things are moving in a certain direction that it seems to me that I didn't cause this. Good things happen to bad people. Bad things happen to good people. Those are the effects that we're looking at. The question is, what is the cause? And theosophy invites us to consider, there's nobody dictating, there's no priest who's ordering, but we're invited to consider what probably makes more sense. That this is the effect of causes I've set in motion, whether earlier in this life or in previous lives, because none of this works if you don't take reincarnation into account. Or is God picking me out and writing out the script for me? Is there even a God out there? And consider both sides and make your decision it's the individual pilgrim's path. The teachings of theosophy, the ancient wisdom of religion, has always taught that the power lies within the individual, that each is responsible for everything, no matter what comes to us. We have the power. If it comes to us, we created it. We have the power to deal with it in the best way. Yes.
That's an interesting observation, how things get away from us. We didn't plan for it. We didn't think that this is such predestined. But an observation of an unborn child is applicable to this, because you look at it. Here's a fetus in the mother, this warm, comfortable existence. You don't even have to chew your food. It comes straight to you already, nourishing you. You just lay in this dreamlike state and this womb of love for 9 months. And then you are forcibly ejected, hands pulling you, these bright lights in your face. All of this, I mean, I didn't plan for this. I had a good place. Why am I being passed and changed? It's the same situation. How do you grow if you don't come out? How do you advance staying there? It's uncomfortable. We search for too much comfort. Growing is uncomfortable. And we have to remember that. That's what we do with growing. It is going to be uncomfortable.
It's going to be uncomfortable. You know, what would happen to the chick who didn't have the strength to puck his way out of the shell?
Somebody should go and look up. Rumi wrote a poem from the viewpoint of the fetus, and telling it there is a different life for you, and the response from the fetus is something like, "It sounds like death to me." But we were wondering, in these obstacles that come up in life, would Lincoln have ever run for president if he hadn't gone bankrupt several times? So sometimes the bad things that happen to you put you in a different position so that you are able to open up to something bigger in the future. So theosophy always teaches us that all of these things are opportunities, if we'd stop looking at them as obstacles.
So then, in a nutshell, it's building our muscles. You know, are we working out for the sake of working out so we have bigger muscles, or are we living our life in certain ways so that we develop so that we can take the next greater challenges that are greater than we can handle right now? Yes. So it's
change that, and it makes a big difference.
It's attitude of mind and motive. And the motive is, you know, is, of course, the other side of it is there are some good, decent, pious, religious people who are offended and say, are you saying that you have the power of God, these theosophist people? Are you kidding me? Well, guess what? It's attitude and motive. The theosophist who, like, proclaims, I am the power of it, where are you going to go with that, you know? But the humble, silent, responsible, kind of questioning individual who's seeking to be of gentle service to others, guess what? Spiritual knowledge is of loving deeds the child. That spiritual knowledge comes through us spontaneously as we live our lives in gentle service to others.
You know what, may I add something?
Sure.
I learned something about that development part in my life. I learned to accept everything that comes when you look at it. It's acceptance that makes you move forward, accepting whatever comes in your path. Once you learn to accept it, you can actually look at it and almost laugh about it and look at it as like, something else. Okay. And you come at it at a different angle. You look at it differently. You have a different perspective.
So that's an example of the individual stepping back, not identifying with the situation, but just accepting it for what it is, stepping back so that the next step is a cause rather than a reaction to the reaction. We're going to set up a next proactive cause. In the white?
This whole question about all the terrible things that are going on, the initial question of people, genocide, earthquakes, what can we do? If we just say, all right, it's their karma, that's a very callous kind of thing to think, even. And in most cases, we're not in a position to help people who are on the other side of the planet. But what's right in front of us, we do witness people who are in trouble. And you know, I'm looking at it from the side of the person who's not in trouble and witnesses it. And I say, this is my karma to try and help them. That's the other side.
So the other side of karma is, yes, there's crazy things going on in the world. If it's not our immediate duty before us to take action on that, simply, that doesn't mean we don't have a purpose in life that's geared toward being of service to others. But let's make no mistake that what's going on the other side of the world is not just, you know, he said, she said in the moment. The astral is populated by ideas, by thoughts. And every idea that we have contributes to it. What is our attitude and mindset toward the people involved in those conflicts? Is it one of condemnation or is it one of compassion? That contributes to the world scenario as well. Yes?
If we have the physical earthquake in Tornado, say over in Asia, thousands of days, we're having the same thing here in this country, but it may not be rocks, water, or anything else. Our own nature may be something different. So it's a matter here of universal brotherhood being a fact in nature. What is affecting
Thank you for the contribution. So here's the recognition that law operates on every plane, and whereas at certain times of our life, law is operating, you know, the karma is coming through pretty hard in physical ways among us, and with other people it may be in emotional and moral ways or psychical ways. So, you know, Let he who is without sin throw the first stone. We're all in this together, and it's all a matter of mindset and motive. There was a hand here.
The comment about accepting what comes to us, and that is a giant step. But there's another step beyond that. Being grateful when it comes. That here is an opportunity now for me to do something and to change. Karma is an opportunity. If we didn't have the opportunities, we would not grow. And we get what we need. We know what we want, but we get what we need.
So the contribution here is you got to have an attitude of gratitude. One thing we learned, watched Oprah, we think the one thing we learned above all else is how she had this show on what you focus on grows. Theosophical as you get. And her conclusion is, therefore, focus on that what you are grateful for. And if you focus on gratitude, then what you are grateful for will always grow. So that's going to really open our minds to all the opportunities that are available to us.
Two things. First of all, it's hard to be grateful when you're sitting in the dentist chair and he's drilling. You know it's an opportunity perhaps to save a tooth.
Yeah.
It's hard to be grateful, and you're also paying money for it. We think if you can't do that, you can at least not complain. You can say either I brought this on myself by poor dental habits, or it's something from a past life. I'm not going to complain I'm sure not going to be grateful yet. I have a long way to go. And the other thing is the idea of the secret, which is sort of the Oprah thing, that you get what you desire, what you go after, what you attract. Theosophy would say yes, but you're misapplying the time scale. The misery that you have right now that you want to get rid of is what you attracted in the past. What you're going to be attracting is in the future. So as she said, change the motive and the attitude and accept what you are attracting as belonging to you.
Thank you. So change the motive and accept what you're attracting as belonging to you. Many of these things, these conditions in life that we own, that are ours, we're told, if left to their own flow, will take a minimum of 3 lives to work their ways through. So those are the conditions that we will experiencing unless one sets up conditions through the power of a vow that can cause things. So those conditions are either going to work themselves out through the lifetimes, if you want to put it up, or take the power of the vow, and that sets certain causes in effect that empower the individual to mitigate them if he follows through. Yes?
We don't have to accept what comes to us, we gladly accept what makes us feel good. What hurts, we reject it. So that means we have to rise above all the effects. And there's something in us that is always above. I can choose.
Thank you. Yes?
Many years ago, a friend of mine, an old friend of mine, told me something, and she said, you have to accept your pain and be grateful for it. And I found that very difficult to accept, but I have also found that if you have a pain, a physical pain, and you make this part of yourself, you accept it as part of your being, suddenly the pain goes away. And I have personally experienced that. I'm sitting in the dentist's chair and doing things to me, and I'm saying, okay, this pain is part of me, I'm accepting it.
And certainly we've experienced that on the emotional plane. When there is emotional pain, a wise friend of ours advised us, just care less and do the right thing. Care less and do the right thing. Theosophically, what that is saying is, accept it for what it is and put new causes in effect. Accept what you have, put new causes in effect. Yes? Yeah, go ahead.
I think, that's interesting you said that, because I came to a point in my life where I can say I have practically almost like no feelings. So I can be happy up to a point. And then upset, I cannot be upset at all. I don't feel pain. I accept it, basically. And that's funny that you say that, because as you say that, I'm kind of relating to that comment that you just said. Care less. But I still have good morals, principles, and values.
Mm-hmm.
So I can objectively...
Doesn't mean be irresponsible.
Exactly.
It's just detach from it.
Exactly.
So what the... contribution here is the student is recognizing the benefit from maintaining equal-mindedness. Regardless what happens out there, I'm not doing this with that because I'm not what that is. I'm just going to observe it, think through it, act accordingly. And if that is how one lives one's life, then one is living one's life very much in accordance with the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is an ancient text which we study here every summer on Wednesday evenings. So the invitation is to come on by on Wednesday. It might strike a chord within the student. And our class is adjourned.
Mike?
Michael,
yes.
Hi, I'm Tom. It's nice to meet you, Mike.
Same here, Tom.